When I was in seminary at Emory University, all of the graduate schools had intramural leagues in different sports, and I played on the basketball team, and every school had to come up with a name for their team. Usually it somehow fit the school, like the med school were called the Sawbones, and the law school were the Jawbones, and I think the dental school were the Chompers. So some guys on the team said, let's call ourselves the Demon Pigs of Gerasene. And we made shirts that said that, the Demon Pigs. And, you know, it was just always hilarious to see these really brilliant doctors and lawyers who would come and look at it. And you could tell they had no idea what that was about, but they didn't want to ask, you know. But we played this one game against the business school, and this guy was like a hippie throwback. And he came up, and before the game started, looked at my jersey and go, ha, 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 Demon Pigs. I went to that concert. Well, it's an odd story, but before we get into it, I want to start with this question. It's kind of a backdrop question to thinking about this miracle story today. Who in your life poured potential into you? Who is somebody in your background who saw what you could be, what you could become, and they leveraged that? Maybe just with a few words. It was just somebody, a coach, a teacher, a neighbor, somebody with just a few words said something to you that made you go, wow, I don't see that in myself. But it spurred something. Maybe there are people who devoted a lot of time and attention, pouring, investing in your life. And you know that you probably would not be where you are today had it not been for that person or those people. Who are some folks in your life like that? I want us to think about that. We'll come back to that thought later in the message. But this story of Jesus and the disciples is another boat story. This series, The Amazing Race, is about places where following Jesus will take you. So 2 weeks in a row, disciples have been with Jesus in a boat on the lake. Now, last week, we talked about what the lake represented, the sea, all of the chaotic, superstitious evils of the world kind of resided in the deep abode. So Jesus is taking them out to face their fears. This week, we need to consider another thought about boats. The boat in early Christianity was a symbol for the church. So even today, the World Council of Churches, as their logo, has a boat. Duke Divinity School has as their symbol a boat with a cross because it shows we're training leaders for the church. Some of our language in church today is derived from the symbolism. If you've ever been in a cathedral that has a really long center aisle, that's called the nave. The long center section is the nave of the sanctuary. The word nave comes from the Latin word that means boat. Now, the point is, when you read a story in the Gospels that begins, Jesus and the disciples got in a boat, this is going to be a story for the church. Whatever happens next is going to be a lesson for what the church is supposed to be like. So in this story, Jesus and the disciples get in a boat and they go across the Sea of Galilee and they come to the region of the Gerasenes, which is the area known as the Decapolis. This story means they have not only gone about the furthest distance away from home that they could get, they are getting far away from home in more ways than geographical. This map helps us understand. This is a map of the Galilee region. You can see the Sea of Galilee in the middle, but the territories around Galilee were divided into different areas. On the western side of the sea is a geographical region known as Galilee. This is a very Jewish side, a very Jewish section. Jesus grew up in one of the towns in Galilee called Nazareth. Many of the towns like Capernaum and others on that side were very Jewish places. But on the other side, toward the southern end, you can see the region called the Decapolis. It means 10 cities. Deca, Polis, 10 cities, goes back to the time of Alexander the Great. who brought a Greek influence into Palestine. And 10 cities that were started at that time preserved their heritage across the centuries. They sort of banded together in that region to hold on to their Greek influence in history, their Greek foods, their Greek language, their Greek architecture. You can see, maybe if your eyes are good enough, the southernmost end of the Decapolis. I think we have that in the next picture, guys. The next map, yes. It shows all of the 10 cities. The southernmost city is Philadelphia. That is today's city, Amman, Jordan. So that might help put it together into a geographical understanding. So, Jesus arrives with the disciples in the Decapolis, which means what? This is a Gentile territory. We know that it's a very different area because when they arrive, what animals are feeding on the hillside? Pigs. Pigs. That means they eat bacon on their hamburger on this side of the lake. This is a very different cultural area. As we know from the Jewish Testament, Jewish people divided all of the world between clean and unclean. Clean and unclean. Pigs were considered to be the most unclean animal. So the people did not eat pork. They didn't have any association with pigs. That's why we know that the prodigal son was at the depths when what? He wanted to eat what the pigs eat. He was a long way from home, wasn't he? This story tells us that the disciples culturally are a long way from home, even though they're just a few miles from home. So if arriving on the shore, seeing pigs on a hillside would not have been enough to make them uncomfortable, imagine when the first person to greet them was a crazed madman running down the hillside who had been cutting himself with stones. Don't you know they wanted to jump in the boat and start rowing backwards? Let's get out of this place. They are in a very different area. This man, whom the Bible says had demons, he was demon-possessed, we today might say he is severely mentally ill. Whatever his condition, this is what we know for sure. Because of his problems, he's been removed from his community. He couldn't live in the village, so he lived out alone among the tombs. In other words, even the Decapolis has its clean and unclean. Every culture has those who fit in and those who don't. Every culture tends to have dividing lines. And this man, because of his problems, was isolated. Have you ever found that your problems can do that to you? Have you ever found that when you're hurting, when you're struggling, when you're going through a difficulty, that it sometimes makes you want to withdraw and to isolate? Sometimes that happens with people. Times in life when the thing that we need the most is other people to support us and to encourage us and lift us up, can be a time that we just don't want to have anything to do with that. Maybe we tend to convince ourselves that we are the only ones going through a problem like that. Nobody else would suffer what I'm suffering, and I would rather they not know. Sometimes we feel like the people we're going to be around are ones we have to pretend to. Sometimes people feel that way about church. One of the reasons that their problems pull them away from church is because they feel that if they come, they can't be honest about what they're feeling. They're just going to have to smile and pretend everything's fine. And they say, I don't have the energy to do that. I can't bear with it right now. I just don't feel like going. Can you relate to that at all? For whatever reason, this man was pulled out of community. And what he was needing was somebody to restore him to his right mind again. I went to a church one time in a new appointment and noticed as I was learning the area, driving to the store, driving to members' homes, I would frequently pass a woman walking on the roadside, like a bag lady. She had a coat that she would wear even in the summertime, pull the hood over her head, always had some kind of bag in her hand and a stick. There were no sidewalks in this area, so sometimes you had to swerve to keep from hitting her if you weren't paying attention. And she always seemed to be oblivious, as if she didn't care if you hit her or not. If you ever got close enough to see her eyes, there was a hollow look, almost like nobody was behind them. I would talk with people about her to find out more information, and they would say, oh, that's the crazy lady. They talked about how she lived in isolation, lived in a home alone, didn't respond to anybody. The only time you saw her was when she had to walk to the store to get something, and if you talked to her, she wouldn't talk back to you. So imagine how surprised I was to find out she was a member of my church. I'd go visit her and knock on the door. She would never answer. People in the church told me she had not always been that way, that she used to be vivacious, full of energy, active in the church, serving in different ministries, but nobody knew what happened. Nobody. They just said, over time, she just started regressing. But there was a small group in the church she would open up to a little bit. They would put firewood on her porch in the winter to make sure she had heat. They would call her on a rainy day to say, now, do you need to go to the store? And she would let them take her. Maybe she trusted them because they didn't push her. They didn't hound her with questions. What's wrong? What's going on? They treated her for the potential that they saw in her. They would talk normally to her, talk about what's going on in their lives, ask how she's doing. If she didn't engage with them, that was fine. I don't know when things changed, but one day she reemerged. She came out. She started attending worship again. She started getting involved in activities she had once been involved in. She became president of the United Methodist Women, became president of the district United Methodist Women. Every time you would see her, she was laughing again, full of energy. I don't know exactly what changed it, but I believe it was community. People who didn't give up on her. People who saw the humanity in her, and they didn't judge her by her problems. They saw through the problems. I believe that's what God used. I believe that's what Jesus was trying to demonstrate to the disciples that day. That somebody running toward them, who was giving them every reason to say, back off, get away from this person. Jesus looked through the problems to see the human being inside and to treat him that way. Jesus treated people with problems. He never treated people as problems. And he called for the interesting name the Bible gives it, unclean spirits, to come out. The spirits that made this person unclean, unwanted, socially unacceptable. Jesus said, get out of him so that the real you can emerge once more. And the spirits go into the pigs. And the pigs rush into the lake. And word of mouth reaches the townspeople. And all the townies come out to see what is going on. They see the crazed man they had written off in his right mind again. They see Jesus and understand he's responsible. And they see 2,000 heads of swine floating in the lake. And what is their response? To tell Jesus to leave. Why would they do that? Maybe because the sacrifice of that much pork was not worth one person's healing. Maybe because the sacrifice that was being called for to be a community that helped everybody know their humanity was too much sacrifice. Community always involves a price. It involves an investment. It involves a sacrifice of some kind. It involves a devotion that might mean giving up a comfort or a want so that other people can have their humanity restored in full community. Jesus will not stay where he's not wanted. So he gets in the boat with his disciples, and the man who'd been healed comes up to Jesus and says, I want to go with you. I want to be your follower too. And the one time in the Bible when Jesus does this, he turns the man down. Why would Jesus ever say to somebody, no, I don't want you following me? Could it be that it's because they were going back to Galilee? They were going back to the clean and unclean world of Judaism. And Jesus knew that this man, who is now healthy and well, might be treated unclean again. So he says, no, stay here, but go to all the cities and tell what God has done for you. I think there is a powerful point at the end of this story. That Jesus' point to this man is, I want you to be my potential that I leave behind. Jesus didn't know whether this man would live a life worthy of the miracle he received. He didn't know what would become of it. He was content to leave behind a potential. Now, it's interesting to note that in Mark's gospel, Jesus returns to this area one time. This is the one place where we find out Jesus came back to the Decapolis. In fact, Mark's gospel records two miracles of the feeding of thousands. Mark says there was one that happened like the other gospels say, near the Mount of Beatitudes. But he said one other time, Jesus went back to the Decapolis and he started teaching because thousands of people heard he was there and they came out to hear him. And then they got hungry and so he fed them. Now, the last time Jesus was there, people said, get away from us. Why is it when he comes back, thousands want to come and hear him? Could it be because that healed man had gone around telling people something and they wanted to find out more? What a powerful thing it is to leave a potential. Dave Williamson told me this story when we were talking about this message for today many weeks ago about a Holocaust survivor named Hilda Back. She now lives in Sweden. Both of her parents died in concentration camps in World War II. In the 1970s, she learned about a project to kind of adopt children in Kenya and help them. So each week, she would put money in an envelope, write a letter, and send it to a boy named Chris. She didn't know the boy, knew nothing about him. He lived in a village with no electricity or running water. And with the money that she sent this boy, whose name is Chris, he was able to get through primary school. And not only get through primary school in Kenya, but eventually, get this, attend Harvard Law School. And today works for the United Nations as a human rights advocate, Chris Maburu. Well, one day Chris realized other kids ought to have what I had. So he started a foundation in the name of the woman who sent him those gifts as a boy, the Hilda Back Foundation. And one day he tracked her down. And he said, I want you to see what this foundation has done. So he took her to Kenya. And while there, she got to see many of the kids who had been blessed by a foundation that was started in her name simply because she left a potential behind. Oh, what does that look like for us? What does it look like to live saying, how can I leave a potential? Sometimes I'm hesitant to do it. I'm hesitant because I want to know, is what I'm going to give to or invest in really going to be worthy of my money or my time or the energy that I'm going to have to give up? I would like to know how it's going to pay off first. But Jesus shows us. Women like Hilda Back show us that just being content with leaving a potential can lead to powerful things. Maybe today, leaving a potential for you would look something like that. Investing financially, investing in something that can make a great difference. Realizing that using what we've been given for generous reasons to help others really is the greatest reward our money can bring us. Maybe it would be like Hilda and adopting a kid. Not literally adopting, but investing in somebody. Yesterday, I came to the church at lunchtime because Brad Fuson, who works with an organization called Achieve International, was here with some of the boys from that organization. He said, I thought you might want to meet them. Achieve International works with some of the most at-risk inner-city kids in Indianapolis. Many of the kids who get involved with them are kicked out of school because of credit issues. Their credits are not enough to continue, or sometimes disciplinary issues. Through sports, through educational events, they help turn lives around. So once a month, a group of these kids, mostly boys, come and they work here at St. Luke's so they can make a little money. We pay them a little money for the work that they do. So I came down to meet them. And I met the fellow who's in charge of Achieve, and he's just this guy who does not see kids' problems, he sees kids' potential. And he pours into that potential, and they just love him. He told me that their greatest need right now is tutors. I was surprised. I thought he would say money. He said, we need tutors to help these kids. But here's the problem. Somebody who's going to tutor the kids has to go to the Decapolis. It's in a hard scrabble area of the city. And it's hard to find people who will go. Maybe God is laying on your heart today this desire to say, I would like to at least find out more. Maybe I could go to that place. Maybe I could help tutor some kids once a week. If so, if you'll write your name on a piece of paper and your contact information, hand it to me on the way out today. I will make sure that this person from Achieve gets in touch with you, and you can just say, hey, all I'm doing is just finding out right now. He would love to talk with you. Maybe the way to leave a potential, the best way, is unintentionally, when we're not even aware we're leaving a potential. John Bunyan, the author of the Christian classic Pilgrim's Progress, said the reason he came to faith was he overheard three women talking about their faith. They were talking about how their relationship with Jesus Christ was like starting life all over again. And they talked about their church and what it was like. And they left. They never knew he had been listening. But when they walked away, he said, whatever they've got, I want. If people overheard you talking about your faith or talking about your church, what kind of potential would it leave? You see, God can use us all the time to leave a potential, even when we don't realize it. Because that is what God does for us.